This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. Our radio show is heard on Pacifica stations nationwide, and you can watch our TV program on Free Speech TV and on our website. Despite his country being in the throes of one of the worst wars of our time, Syrian President Bashar al-Assad unveiled a statue of his late father, Hafez Assad, in Hama, one of the birthplaces of the rebellion against his rule. There is currently a tenuous ceasefire in place between Assad and the rebel groups he is fighting. According to Al Jazeera, Assad has made an offer to swap prisoners with the rebels as a gesture of goodwill. But groups like Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch have documented very serious war crimes by Assad. Amnesty UK's recent report detailing the horrors of mass hangings at Said Naya prison is based on testimony from survivors. And Human Rights Watch's new report just released on Monday shows the use of chlorine gas bombs dropped by the regime on civilian and rebel areas. The New York Times said, quote, the assertions in the Human Rights Watch study, if confirmed, would represent one of the most egregious uses of such outlawed weaponry in the war. End of quote. But such reports are dismissed by many in the U.S. left as sensationalist or even false, asserting that they are, quote, stoking Syrian war. My guest is Stephen Zunis. He's a professor of politics and international studies at the University of San Francisco, where he serves as coordinator of the program in Middle Eastern Studies. He also serves as senior policy analyst for Foreign Policy in Focus, and it's a project of the Institute for Policy Studies. He's also an associate editor of Peace Review, and he's a frequent guest on this program. Welcome back to the show, Stephen.
Good to be with you.
So this issue of Syria, of course, has become highly politicized given the Syrian refugee crisis and Donald Trump's Muslim ban that has attempted to permanently exclude Syrian refugees. But the flip side of that is in the Syria itself, you have this horrific war. And it seems strange that we see many on the left defending a person who so obviously appears to be a murderous dictator. Why is that happening?
It's hard to say. I mean, I think we've been burned a lot and by our government grossly exaggerating and sometimes fabricating human rights abuses by governments we don't like in order to justify military intervention, while as bad or worse human rights abuses by governments the United States supports are being are covered up or minimized. In this case, however, the war crimes of the Assad regime are all too true, and the evidence is overwhelming, not just from Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch, but from groups like Physicians for Human Rights, Médecins Sans Frontières, the UN Human Rights Council, and others. Now, personally, I'm an opponent of U.S. military intervention in Syria, and I have been from the very beginning. But this does not mean that the Assad regime is not indeed guilty of gross and heinous war crimes, and including this apparent mass hangings at one of their more notorious prisons.
So let's discuss a little bit this report by Amnesty, Stephen. I mean, certainly the title of the report is, you know, very clear, and it does sound sensationalist on the surface. Human slaughterhouse, mass hangings, and extermination at Said Naya prison, Syria. Slaughterhouse, mass hangings, and extermination. Those three words and phrases are pretty remarkable. I mean, the word extermination implies genocide.
Strong language indeed, but according to the report, it seems quite justified. They interviewed no less than 84 witnesses. These are survivors, former guards, former officials, judges, lawyers. They also cross-checked with their contacts within the country, the various civil society organizations and the like. And so there's no reason to doubt its veracity. Amnesty International so far has been, reports on Syria seem to have been pretty accurate. They're quite consistent with findings by these other human rights groups. So as a result, I'm afraid this is a very apt title. And remember, when the United States was engaged in the so-called Extraordinary Rendition Program of sending suspects to third countries to be tortured, Syria was a favorite destination. Assad was quite willing to help the United States and the Bush administration because of the brutality of the torture and their thoroughness was quite happy to work with him. Some of your listeners may be familiar with the case of the Canadian citizen who was mistaken because of a similar name or something for a suspected Al-Qaeda terrorist, who when he was changing planes in New York to return to his home in Canada was seized by U.S. officials and deported to Damascus, where he endured a good 6 months or more of this horrific torture. So the Assyrian regime's propensity for this kind of thing predates the uprising and civil war. Indeed, it goes back for decades.
And in fact, the images that you see in the report of those survivors who were interviewed, there are before and after images that are pretty stark. I mean, you know, individuals who before they were imprisoned looking like healthy people, and then after they endured the prison torture, sunken cheeks, hollow eyes. I'm not sure what explanation there is, but you know, we've also heard a lot of questioning of the white helmets and whether they are indeed, this is the group of Syrian rescue workers, whether they are indeed in the service of the United States or not. So this particular report by Amnesty tries to recreate the prison. It's very sort of a sophisticated analysis, and I can see how someone might be a little bit skeptical because it looks slick. I mean, does slickness often make people suspicious?
Yeah, certainly, because we've certainly seen times when the United States and other countries, in order to justify military intervention, have gone to great lengths to make their case and through these slick PR practices. It was originally pushed through the Office of Public Diplomacy under the Reagan administration to justify U.S. Support for the Contra terrorists and the like. So I can certainly understand the skepticism that's out there. But let's remember that Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, these other groups that suddenly some people on the left are dissing as being imperialist agents or bias, these are the very people that were attacked viciously by both Republicans and Democrats for their thoroughly detailed accounts of Israeli war crimes in Gaza and the West Bank and in Lebanon and elsewhere, and more recently of Saudi war crimes in Yemen. They have been quite willing also to accuse the United States of war crimes in Iraq and Afghanistan and elsewhere. So this idea that these organizations and this includes again, Médecins Sans Frontières, Physicians for Human Rights, UNHRC, which has been a particular target by Congress and the administration for its critical reports involving Israel. I mean, all of these groups, the idea that they would give these detailed, withering reports against the United States and its allies for war crimes are somehow have a pro-Western bias and are suddenly working at the behest of Western imperialists to discredit the Syrian regime in order to justify Western intervention. I mean, it's ludicrous on face values. Mm-hmm. And this does not mean that 100% of every single report that they do is accurate. They make mistakes. But there's no reason to believe that their reports on Syria are any less accurate than the reports many on the left have so widely quoted when it involves the regimes that the United States supports.
Right. I mean, mistakes are one thing. Fabrications of entire reports are a whole different thing. Human Rights Watch's report on Monday that was released specifically focusing on chlorine gas attacks by the regime includes photographs of green smoke from chlorine attacks in Aleppo in particular as recently as last November. And of course, the fact that these chemical attacks are being documented as the responsibility of the government certainly does scare a lot of people because it reminds them of the rhetoric we saw on Iraq, right? Stephen, let's talk about that. Mm-hmm. We heard the Saddam Hussein regime in Iraq being accused of chemical attacks and, you know, gassing Kurdish populations. Then there were reports of Iraqi soldiers yanking babies out of incubators. How much of the sort of questioning around those stories, or even the truthfulness of those stories, then led to a devastating U.S. war is why we're seeing this kind of reaction from the U.S. left?
Well, certainly the gassing of the Kurds, which took place back in the late 1980s, is indeed well documented.
That was a real
ironically, the Reagan administration tried to blame Iran, then our preferred enemies, for the attack, while we were secretly providing the Iraqis with the very components to produce these chemical weapons. And then 25 years later, we tried to retroactively use these war crimes as an excuse to invade. And to their credit, a number of human rights groups said, that's ridiculous. You can, you know, you could possibly have justified intervention at the time of the genocidal campaign, the Anfal campaign, back in the late 1980s, which included these chemical weapons, but you can't retroactively justify it as a war of aggression, especially since Iraq had long disarmed itself of these very prescribed weapons. And so, yeah.
What about the incubator stories?
Sorry?
The stories of babies being ripped out of incubators.
Yeah, okay, that was also a setup. I mean, the Saddam Hussein's regime indeed engaged in some brutal human rights abuses, including what could be considered war crimes during its 6-month occupation of Kuwait, and Amnesty International and other groups, documented these. In one case, unfortunately, Amnesty did report a false accounting that was actually a PR job of this alleged throwing babies out of incubators. Amnesty immediately recognized and made an error, apologized, and strengthened their reporting since then. I'm not aware of any error of this magnitude by Amnesty International since then. But it's interesting, people keep bringing this up to assume that therefore, because they made this one mistake over 25 years ago, that therefore they are manufacturing these huge reports from scratch to justify a military intervention. Amnesty International did not support U.S. military intervention in Iraq. Indeed, as I said, they emphasize the fact that past war crimes were no justification for this. Indeed, these human rights groups in general do not take stances on things like military intervention. Some individuals in the organizations do, but as an entity, they tend not to call for a military intervention, including so-called humanitarian intervention, because as we have seen historically, oftentimes this makes things worse instead of better.
Now, what about the fact that Amnesty does call, and this is one of the things that is being cited as stoking war, this report stoking war. In its report, Amnesty says it is of the utmost importance that members of the UN Security Council take immediate action. The Syrian state's backers, in particular Russia with its permanent seat on the Security Council, and Iran must condemn the extrajudicial executions and extermination policies of the Syrian state, etc. It sounds as though they're asking for the UN to take action, but somehow I guess this is being interpreted by some on the U.S. left as Amnesty inviting the U.S. to drop bombs on Syria, which incidentally
they weren't implying anything of the sort of any kind of military intervention. Indeed, it's interesting the language that they use, imploring the Russians and Iranians, who are the primary backers of the Syrian regime, to condemn it and use their clout diplomatically, economically, politically in terms of military aid, whatever, to push Syria to end such human rights abuses. It's almost the very same language that they have used in terms of the United States and Israel and its war crimes. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they are suggesting that the UN bomb Israel. I think right. they're simply saying that the United States should stop this kind of unconditional report, which has enabled Israel to commit its war crimes. So basically, they're using the same standard for in both cases, and recognizing that whether it's a bombing civilian targets in Aleppo or bombing civilian targets in Gaza, these are still war crimes, and it is wrong for any country to provide unconditional military assistance to countries that engage in such war crimes. In fact, just a couple months ago, they came out with a similar statement vis-a-vis Saudi Arabia, which is armed by the United States and Britain and have been committing war crimes in Yemen. So again, calling on countries to take action to stop arming and supporting governments which engage in violations of international humanitarian law is not the same as calling for some kind of unilateral military intervention.
Sadly, we've seen this sort of thing before, even with a documented murderous dictator like Saddam Hussein. We saw some elements on the left supporting Saddam. We saw some elements on the left supporting Yugoslavia's Milosevic. And I'm wondering if the common thread here is that some of these dictators appear to at some point be critical of the United States and therefore are seen as allies to the U.S. left, and or the fact that they might have some socialist leaning tendencies. Does that play into it, you think?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there is this kind of enemy of my enemy is my friend. And I've been a lifelong anti-imperialist. And I opposed the invasion of Iraq. I opposed U.S. intervention in Syria. I opposed the Kosovo war in 1999, the NATO bombing. But
that was actually the first war that I ever demonstrated against, by the way, the war against war.
Yeah, and I mean, but again, the world is not that simple. It's not an either or. In many ways, these folks are doing the mirror image of the U.S. administration that assumes that if you're an ally of the United States, therefore you're good, and if you oppose the United States, you're therefore for bad. And I think it's really important that we move away from this kind of simplistic either or. I mean, some of the most wonderful activists in the United States during the 30s were Communist Party members working for civil rights and labor, and yet they were in total denial of Stalin's crimes, and that ended up very much hurting the reputation, a lot of the good work they did do. So I think the elements of the anti-imperialist left that tend to deny or be apologists for these regimes do the other progressive causes they may support a disservice.
Right.
I'd also mention that on this whole socialist argument, the only way that the younger Assad has liberalized vis-a-vis his father is economically. In other words, whatever socialist rhetoric he might use, you know, he would have done the IMF proud in terms of the privatization and the cutbacks and social services. Many of these countries, including Serbia in the later days of Milosevic and Syria under Assad, is much more a kind of a crony capitalist system than anything remotely resembling socialism. I mean, socialism is often thrown around the way we use democracy, you know, here in the West, as a buzzword to justify regimes that are engaged in all sorts of heinous activities. So, despite my own socialist proclivities and opposition to efforts by the United United States and international financial institutions to impose capitalist hegemony on the world. Let's not pretend that regimes like Assad are remotely socialist. Indeed, the initial nonviolent uprising, the first 6 months or so of the popular pro-democracy part of the Syrian uprising before it was taken over by these armed Islamist militia, had the broadest of working class base of any of the Arab revolutions. And so much of what they were pushing for was not just an end to the repression, but an end to the corruption and the social injustice and inequality. So just because some dictator calls himself socialist or he belongs to a party that calls itself socialist, it doesn't mean it is actually socialist.
Well, Stephen, I want to thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your insights on these issues. I'm sure they will be controversial. I'm sure people will contact us with their angry responses. But I feel that it is important for us to report on these atrocities, even in cases where the U.S. is threatening to go to war. It's just, you know, you wouldn't deny the, we wouldn't have denied the Holocaust, in fear of the U.S. joining World War II. When there are mass atrocities
happening. The Japanese and Germans portrayed themselves as opposed to Western imperialism.
Yeah, and, there you go.
And being opposed to Western imperialism doesn't mean you're necessarily progressive.
Thank you so much, Stephen. I always appreciate having you on.
Likewise.
Dr. Stephen Zunis is a professor of politics and international studies at the University of San Francisco, where he serves as coordinator of the program in Middle Eastern Studies. This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. We're also on Twitter at twitter.com/ruwithsonali.